Welcome to Hallel Fellowship, found on the internet at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. We hope you are encouraged by the following recorded Bible study to look deeper into every word that proceeds from the mouth of God and how they were lived out in the life of Yeshua HaMashiach, often called Jesus the Christ.
So today, we are going to be looking at the Torah portion as our springboard of Shalach. Not Shalach, but you might say that's kind of what happens to Israel at the end of the reading. But Shalach means to send, to send. And actually, very fitting thing about sending, because we will be seeing, comparing what happens with this and also with the Messiah's sending out of the 12 and the 70. And quite different results in the first time around. But it also undergirds a lot of what we had studied recently with Hebrews. And we went, when we did our deep dive into Hebrews 1 through chapter 10, we saw that a big portion in there, you know, chapters 3 and 4 in particular, focus in on sort of what we're going to be looking at today with the, will you enter my rest? Will you enter my rest? And that being in reference to entering the land being in reference to rest. And you see in Hebrews, especially chapter 4, that rest is connected with Messiah. Messiah being true rest. And that, what did Messiah say? Come to me, all you are heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. Connecting that with a lot of what we're looking at today. So, starting out our reading, we're going to be in Numbers 13 through 15, starting with Numbers 13. Then the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, "Send out for yourself men, so that they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I am going to give to the sons of Israel. You shall send a man from each of their father's tribes, everyone a leader among them." So Moshe sent them from the wilderness of Paran at the command of the Lord, all of them men who were the heads of the sons of Israel. These were their names: from the tribe of Reuben, Shemua the son of Zakur; from the tribe of Shimon, Shaphat the son of Hori; from the tribe of Yehuda, Caleb the son of Jephunneh; from the tribe of Issachar, Igal the son of Joseph; from the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea the son of Nun; from the tribe of Benjamin, Palti the son of Raphu; from the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel the son of Sodi; from the tribe of Yosef; from the tribe of Manasseh, Gadi the son of Susi; from the tribe of Dan, Amiel the son of Gamaliel; from the tribe of Asher, Satur the son of Michael; from the tribe of Naphtali, Nabi the son of Vophsi; from the tribe of Gad, Geuel the son of Machi. These were the names of the men whom Moshe sent to spy out the land. But Moshe called Hoshua the son of Nun Yehoshua. Then Moshe sent them to spy out the land of Canaan. He said to them, "Go up there into the Negev, then go up into the hill country. See what the land is like, and whether the people who live in it are strong or weak, whether they are few or many. How is the land in which they live? Is it good or bad? And how are the cities in which they live? Are they like open camps or with fortifications? How is the land? Is it fat or lean? Are there trees in it or not? Make an effort then to get some of the fruit of the land." Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob at Lebu Hamat. When they had gone up into the Negev, they came into Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were there. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Mitzrayim. Then they came to the valley of Eshcol. And from there, they cut down a branch with a single cluster of grapes, and they carried it on a pole between two men with some of the pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster which the sons of Israel cut down from there. When they returned from spying out the land at the end of 40 days, they proceeded to come to Moshe and Aharon, to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. And they brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Thus they told them and said, "We went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified, very large. And moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are living in the hill country. And the people of Canaan are living by the sea, by the side of the Yarden." Then Caleb quieted the people before Moshe and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us." So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. Now also we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, are also part of the Nephilim. We became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." Chapter 14. Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. All the sons of Israel grumbled against Moshe and Aharon, and the whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Mitzrayim, or that we had died in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Mitzrayim?" So they said to one another, "Let us appoint a leader and return to Mitzrayim." Then Moshe and Aharon fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel. Yehoshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, of those who spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, "The land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then we will bring into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. The Lord said to Moshe, "How long will this people spurn me, and how long will they not believe in me, despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? I will smite them with pestilence and dispossess them, and I will make you into a nation greater and mightier than they." But Moshe said to the Lord, "Then the Mitzrayim will hear of it, and for by your strength you brought up this people from their midst, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They have heard that you, O Lord, are in the midst of this people, for you, O Lord, are seen eye to eye, while your cloud stands over them, and you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and in a pillar of fire by night. Now if you slay this people as one man, then the nations who have heard of your name will say, 'Because the Lord could not bring this people into the land which he promised them by oath, therefore he slaughtered them in the wilderness.' But now I pray, let the power of the Lord be great, just as you have declared. The Lord is slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers and the children to the third and the fourth generations. Pardon, I pray, the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your loving kindness, just as you have forgiven this people from Mitzrayim even until now. So the Lord said, I have pardoned them according to your word. But indeed as I live, all the earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord. Surely all the men who have seen my glory, my signs which I performed in Mitzrayim and in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, shall by no means see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who spurned me see it. But my servant, Caleb, because he has had a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it. Now, the Amaleki and the Canaanites live in the valleys. Turn tomorrow and set out to the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. The Lord spoke to Moshe and Aharon, saying, How long shall I bear with this evil congregation who are grumbling against me? I have heard the complaints of the sons of Israel, which they are making against me. Say to them, As I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will surely do to you. Your corpses will fall in this wilderness, even all your numbered men, according to your complete number from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. Surely you have not come into the land in which I swore to settle you, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Yehoshua the son of Nun. Your children, however, whom you said would become prey, I will bring them in, and they will know the land which you have rejected. But as for you, your corpses will fall in the wilderness. Your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness, and they will suffer for your unfaithfulness until your corpses lie in the wilderness. According to the number of days which you spied out the land, 40 days. For every day you shall bear your guilt, a year, even 40 years, and you will know my opposition. I, the Lord, have spoken. Surely I will do this, all this evil congregation who have gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be destroyed, and there they will die. As for the men whom Moshe sent to spy out the land, and who returned and made all the congregation grumble against him, by bringing out a bad report concerning the land, even those men who brought out the very bad report of the land died by a plague before the Lord. But Yehoshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh remain alive out of all the men who went to spy out the land. But Moshe spoke these words to all the sons of Israel. The people mourned greatly. In the morning, however, they rose up early and went up to the ridge of the hill country, saying, Here we are, we have indeed sinned, but we will go up to the place which the Lord has promised. Moshe said, Why then are you transgressing the commandment of the Lord, when it will not succeed? Do not go up, or you will be struck down before your enemies, for the Lord is not among you. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites will be there in front of you, and you will fall by the sword, inasmuch as you have turned back from following the Lord, and the Lord will not be with you. But they went up heedlessly to the ridge of the hill country. Neither the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord nor Moshe left the camp. Then the Amalekites and the Canaanites who lived in that hill country came down and struck them and beat them down as far as Hormah. Chapter 15. Now the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, When you enter the land where you are to live, which I am giving you, then make an offering by fire to the Lord, a burnt offering or a sacrifice to fulfill a special vow, or a freewill offering, or in your appointed times, to make a soothing aroma to the Lord from the herd or from the flock. The one who presents his offering shall present to the Lord a grain offering of 1/10 of an ephah, fine flour mixed with 1/4 of a hin of oil. And you shall prepare wine for the drink offering, 1/4 of a hin, with the burnt offering or the sacrifice for each lamb. Or for a ram, you shall prepare a grain offering, 2/10 of an ephah, fine flour mixed with 1/3 of a hin of oil. And for the drink offering, you shall offer 1/3 of a hin of wine as a soothing aroma to the Lord. When you prepare a bull as a burnt offering or sacrifice to fulfill a special vow or for a peace offering to the Lord, then you shall offer with the bull a grain offering of 3/10 of an ephah, fine flour mixed with 1/2 of a hin of oil. And you shall offer as the drink offering 1/2 of a hin of wine as an offering by fire, as a soothing aroma to the Lord. Thus it shall be done for each ox, or for each ram, or for each of the male lambs, or for of the goats. According to the number that you prepare, so you shall do for everyone according to their number. All who are native shall do these things in this matter, in presenting an offering by fire, as a soothing aroma to the Lord. If an alien sojourns among you, or one whom you say among you throughout your generations, and he wishes to make an offering by fire as a soothing aroma to the Lord, just as you do, so he shall do. As for the assembly, there shall be one statute for you, and for the alien who sojourns among you, a perpetual statute throughout your generations. As you are, so shall the alien be before the Lord. There is to be one law and one ordinance for you and for the alien who sojourns among you. Then the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land where I bring you, then it shall be that when you eat the food of the land, you shall lift up an offering to the Lord. Of the first of your dough, you shall lift up a cake as an offering. As the offering of the threshing floor, so you shall lift it up. From the first of your dough, you shall give it to the Lord an offering throughout your generations. But when you unwittingly fail and do not observe all these commandments which the Lord has spoken to Moshe, even all that the Lord has commanded you through Moshe, from the day when the Lord gave commandment and onward throughout your generations, then it shall be, if it is done unintentionally without the knowledge of the congregation, that all the congregation shall offer one bull for a burnt offering, as a soothing aroma to the Lord, with its grain offering and its drink offering, according to the ordinance, and one male goat for a sin offering. Then the priest shall make atonement for all the congregation of the sins of the sons of Israel, and they will be forgiven, for it was an error. But they have brought their offering, an offering by fire to the Lord, and their sin offering before the Lord for their error. So all the congregation of the sons of Israel will be forgiven with the alien who sojourns among them, for it happened to all the people through error. Also, if one person sins unintentionally, then he shall offer a one-year-old female goat for a sin offering. A priest shall make atonement before the Lord for a person who goes astray when he sins unintentionally, making atonement for him that he may be forgiven. You shall have one law for him who does anything unintentionally, for him who is native-born among the sons of Israel, and for the alien who sojourns among them. But the person who does anything defiantly, whether he is a native or an alien, that one is blaspheming the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from among his people, because he has despised the word of the Lord and has broken his covenant, his commandment, that person shall be completely cut off. His guilt will be on him. Now while the sons of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man gathering wood on the Shabbat. Those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moshe and Aharon and to all the congregation. And they put him in custody because it had not been declared what should be done to him. Then the Lord said to Moshe, the man shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones outside the camp. So all the congregation brought him outside the camp and stoned him to death with stones, just as the Lord had commanded Moshe. The Lord also spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and tell them, that they shall make for themselves tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, and that they shall put on the tassel in each corner a cord of blue. It shall be a tassel for you to look at and to remember all the commandments of the Lord, so as to do them and not to follow after your own heart or your own eyes, after which you played the harlot, so that you may remember to do all my commandments and to be holy to the Lord your God. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from the land of Mitzrayim to be your God. I am the Lord your God. So thus we see at the completion of this, kind of an interesting, you might say, grab bag of things. What on earth does, for example, chapter 15, talking about offerings and such, have to do anything with chapters 13 and 14, talking about the selection of people to go in the land, the spies that went into the land, and then in chapter 14, kind of their results and the back and forth between Caleb and Yehoshua on what they were going to do as far as what their testimony was, saying what the land was like and what their chances were, and then what the other 10 said their approach was going to be. So we just take a first look here at the selection. And Moshe, and we look in chapter 13, verses 4 through 15, they have this list of the people who were selected for this, and the selection of the people in the tribes: Reuben, Shimon, Yehuda, Issachar, Ephraim, Benjamin, Zebulun, Dan, Asher, Naphtali, and Gad in there. That's Gad. Now, as we look at this, say, okay, we got a good selection of people. Now, one of the things that some sages have said throughout time is that actually some of them have said, well, it's Moshe's fault that this went downhill fast. Because you see, at the beginning of chapter 13, it says, hey, go pick some people. And they say, well, he didn't pick them by lot, so thus it was not quite a divine selection. So he picked them, would say, out of error. He picked the wrong people. He made 10 bad choices out of all these. Terrible choices out of these tribes. Now, one of the things to look at in connection with this, we're going to Matthew chapter 10, verse 2, and we see the list of the 12. Is the list of the 12. So we got 12 spies that are going into the land, and here we have the 12. They're called apostles, but apostle is just the Greek word for those who are sent. So if you were to move that into Hebrew, they would be like the shalachim, or that's where we've got shalach from, those who are sent or to send. So over in, keep a finger over there in Numbers, because we'll be back soon. So Matthew chapter 10, I'm going to start here just taking a look. We'll be going through a good portion of chapter 10 here. Now let's start here with verses 1 and 2. Yeshua summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Now these are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Shimon, who is called Kepha, and Andrew his brother, and Yaakov the son of Zebedee, and Yochanan his brother, Philip, and Bartholomew, and Thomas, and Matthias, and Yaakov the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, and Shimon the Zealot, and Yehuda Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. So, you might say, alright, better selection, because you're talking about the Messiah selected them. So, it just on its face, if you were to just start making some sort of comparison here, well, we had a problem with one of the key ones in there. Key one there being, Yehuda Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. Oh, was that a bad choice? Bad choice? You see, all the way up through like the gospel according to Yohanan or John, there and starting in like chapter 12, 13 and such, and where you get into what's commonly called the Last Supper, call it the last big Pesach that Yeshua celebrated with his closest with the 12, is basically leaving that out there. It's like, okay, this is going to happen. Somebody's going to have to do it. Wow, you don't want to be that person that it has to happen through. But go do what you're going to do. And whatever you're going to do, do it quickly, he tells Yehuda Iscariot. Yet, Yehuda Iscariot had a front row seat on all the things that that Yeshua was doing, saying, seeing the power of God at work, and going in a different direction. Now, you could say this is kind of a great up-close seat. You could say that Yehuda Iscariot was specifically chosen, even though knowing he was going to betray. Because why? Great testimony to Israel. Hey, look, remember the Exodus? Remember the 12 spies? You folks, and it mentions in our passage here today, we're going through in Shalach. You had a front row seat on all this stuff that happened. The Exodus, the plagues, the Red Sea, the manna coming every day except for one, double portion on the day before. You saw all these things and still you decided to go a different direction. Decided to not trust, to not have faith. So in this, you could say Yehuda Iscariot was a sign in and of himself. And that is key reason why he shows up in the Gospels as a sign. Look, if you are going to have a front row seat to the acts of God, wow, be careful. It's kind of what we talked about in Hebrews 3 and 4. It's like, you saw all this, your today showed up. What are you going to do about it? What decision are you going to make when your choice is to enter the Lord's rest? What are you going to do about it? Are you going to balk because the cost is too much? It's going to take too much out of you? You're going to get into it and realize, oh, wow, it took a lot more out of me than I thought, and then turn back? So, what we see here is the same lesson Moshe bringing forward, the Lord bringing through with Moshe and the spies. Same lesson that Messiah is bringing forward. Same plan here happening. Look, pay attention. So, kind of an overview here. Let's peruse through Matthew chapter 10 further. We're going to be going through... first off, before we go there, just a little bit more in talking about the two other folk with the 12 spies. The two of the 12 spies, Caleb and Yehoshua, who gave the good report. Now, one of the things you had seen here is that for Caleb's, for his faith in the Lord, to say, hey, look, the odds are bad, the walls are big, the people are big, even the grapes are big. Everything's big up there. But regardless, we can do it. We can do it. Why? Because we're so mighty? No! It's because the Lord is the one. Caleb got it. He paid attention to what had happened during the Exodus and everything thereafter. Thus, you see, Caleb was right at the side of Moshe. Yehoshua was right at the side of Moshe. The front row seat on what was happening and what Moshe was doing. So they're like, okay, hey, God is working here. So thus, you see, and kind of recorded there in Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 36, about, okay, that faith. So You had faith in what the Lord was doing, so thus you're given a little bit more. Remember what Messiah said? To those who are given, more will be given. To those who are given and don't do anything with it, what they have will be taken away. So you see that faithful inside of Israel, unfaithful inside of Israel. But sadly, the faithful had to go through those 40 years as well. They had to go through it with everybody else. They could say, hey, you know, just leave these reprobates. We'll just go in. We'll send you postcards from the promised land. You know, but they went through it with everybody else because it was, we all go in together. So thus you can see what the Apostle Paul is getting out there in Romans chapter 11 when he's saying, thus all Israel will be saved. He just went through talking about, yeah, there's going to have to be some natural parts of the olive tree lopped off and wild grown ones grafted into the olive tree of Israel. But the point is, you go in as a unit because this is a team. This is something, it's not just a band of individuals. It's not like celestial meetup where you just get the invitation to all show up in the same place and, oh, there we are, we're all here together. No, this is something where you all are in this together, all have roles to play. All the way, in this case, we're looking at numbers from Moshe. Aharon had a role, Caleb had a role, Yehoshua had a role. All these folks had roles. And thus, you see also, as Yeshua was sending them in, his 12 that he was sending throughout the land, he was sending them out ahead of him in some cases. And then later on you see he had 70 that he sent out. So let's go through, we're going to go through Matthew chapter 10 all the way through chapter 11, verse 1. Because we're going to get we've just seen the who, but now we're also going to see the where and the why and the how of what is going on here. And a lot of what we see here in the where and the why and the how also relates to what we've just read here in Numbers. So we're going to pick up Verse 3 of chapter 10. Oh, I guess we're down to verse 5. These 12 Yeshua sent out over after instructing them, do not go in the way of the nations, and do not enter any city of the Samaritans, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. Freely you received, freely give. Do not acquire gold or silver or copper for your money belts, or a bag for your journey, or even two coats or sandals or a staff, for the worker is worthy of his support. And whatever city or village you enter, inquire who is worthy in it. And stay at his house until you leave that city. As you enter the house, give it your greeting. If the house is worthy, give it your blessing of peace. But if it is not worthy, take back your blessing of peace. Whoever does not receive you, nor heeds your words, as you go out of that house or that city, shake the dust off your feet. Truly I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be shrewd as servants and innocent as doves. But beware of men, for they will hand you over to the courts and scourge you in their synagogues. And you will even be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the nations. But when they hand you over, do not worry about how or what you are to say, for it will be given you in that hour what you are to say. For it is not you who speak, but it is the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father's child and children will rise up against their parents and cause them to be put to death. You will be hated by all because of my name, And it is the one who has endured to the end who will be saved. But whenever they persecute you in one city, flee to the next. For I truly say to you, you will not finish going through the cities of Israel until the Son of Man comes. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a slave above his master. It is enough for the student that he become like his teacher, and the slave like his master. If they have called the head of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign the members of his household? Therefore, do not fear them, for there is nothing concealed that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in the darkness, speak in the light, and what you hear whispered in your ear, proclaim upon the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body, but are unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in Gehenna. Are not two sparrows sold for a cent, and yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father? But the very hairs on your head are all numbered. So do not fear. You are more valuable than many sparrows. Therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven. Do not think I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I came to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's enemies will be members of his household. He who loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. He who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. He who does not take his own cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who has found his life will lose it, and he who has lost his life for my sake will find it. He who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me. He who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. And he who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. And whoever in the name of a student gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cold water to drink, truly I say to you, he shall not lose his reward. When Yeshua had finished giving instructions to his 12 disciples, he departed there to teach and preach in their cities. So as we see here, a lot of instructions. And as we kind of take a look at these instructions, let's see here. Yeah. So one of the things to note is we always think of the 12 being sent out, but there was actually, as it mentions at the outset of our lesson here in Luke 10, it is actually 70. So you have 12 are the ones that become, you know, pillars of the congregation, the body of Messiah. But then you also have 70. Sound familiar? Remember when we were going through Exodus about the 70 elders and those people being called out and having front row seat to things that were happening? Having lunch with the presence of the Lord there? They being a witness. And you even see that the Spirit of the Lord made a very big appearance there amongst their number. Because there was, remember, a couple of them were still in the encampment, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon them and prophesied. Yeah, that's Acts stuff, right? Only happened in the book of Acts. No, it happened there as it's recorded in Exodus. So Spirit of the Lord was at work. The Spirit came with power there during the Exodus. Spirit came with even more power. He even saw during this discussion in Luke chapter 10, we saw an argument style. Remember, we talked about that when we were going through Hebrews, about the call of a Chomer, the from light to heavy form of argument. If this is true, well, then how much more this? We talked about that with the, look, if they call Beelzebul, how much more? So that is one of those things that you just have to note, that it is an argument style that says, if you accept this much is true, well, then accept this that I'm going to tell you, which has a whole lot more impact upon you. And that was in the context of like saying, look, if they call the Messiah, you know, he's saying that you are the devil, what do you think they're going to do to you? You think you're going to escape through this? And then he talks about, yeah, you'll be dragged in. And we see that recorded in the book of Acts with a incredibly gifted deacon. We often think, well, the deacon is only someone who takes up the offering and cleans the floors. No, when you see in the book of Acts, deacons were pretty powerful. They say, yeah, these seven that are specifically mentioned in Acts were those who were to take care of the physical needs of those in the body of Messiah. But you see, like with Stephen, he was so gifted with the Spirit of God that words were put into his mouth when he needed them. You see it recorded there, one of those great sermons right at his execution. He was given the words to say, incredibly powerful words to say that also spanned over the history of Israel to remind the council, which was putting him to death, hey, remember where you came from. Remember where the Lord took the nation and what the nation chose to do and chose not to do and what happened as a result of the choosing not to do the things that the Lord was instructing. So, kind of like what Gamaliel said, as was recorded earlier, when it related to Peter and Yochanan. Yeah, they were brought in before the council. That, hey, the Lord may be at work at here, and we may not be seeing what the Lord is doing. So let's keep the benefit of the doubt that the Lord may be at work here, and not say, this is the work of the adversary. This may be. The sad part is as we saw in related to the David, that the Lord may be the adversary against what you're doing if you're taking a completely different approach. So be very careful. Because remember that who was the one who sent the destroyer during the Exodus? The Lord sent the destroyer. The Lord also blocked the destroyer, didn't allow the destroyer to enter houses that had the blood on the doorpost, but the Lord did send the destroyer. So we always have to keep in mind who it is that we serve and who it is that we're talking about. So, kind of a good comparison to that. Now, some on the instructions that what the Messiah gave to the 12, and I guess you could say to the extended to the 70. Because if you look here in Mark chapter 6, verses 7 through 13, also very close to what you see in Luke chapter 10. About dominating the strongholds, talking about unclean spirits, cast out demons. Demonstrate the power of the heaven is behind you, the goal of the mission. About anointing the sick, raising the dead. It's like, wow, that's a pretty good testimony that the power of God may be at work here. Now, one of the things that you see the Apostle Paul warn about is that what is going to happen with the man of lawlessness down near the time of the day of the Lord? Great signs and wonders. So just because you see great signs and wonders, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the work of God, but don't discount that it could be. Say, maybe God is at work. Investigate this further. But don't be totally led away by it. And, you know, some more things, especially what you see here in Matthew 10:8, freely you have received, freely give. If the Lord has given you a gift, learn what the gift is and pass it on. If the gifts are just simply what the Lord has done in your life and how the Lord has transformed you, taken from where you've been before to where you are now and to where you will go, that's a great gift. Share that. Share that as well. And something else you see about a lot about depending on the provision of heaven. and the Spirit's work, basically preparing the way ahead of these people. You know, if you see a house, and they will invite you in to stay, go in, stay there. If they're very inviting, then give your blessing upon it. The kind of, we don't so often take the full advantage, you might say, of the blessing of a house, blessing of a new house. You're just moving into a new house, a blessing upon it. We see in the Shema, as it continues on in Deuteronomy chapter 6, about, you know, putting the mezuzah, the doorpost, and having the words of the Lord on that. But what is it? Is it just an interesting decoration? Or is that part of a further proclamation, dedication of that house to be what? The gates where the word of the Lord is at work with power. So thus, you know, it might not be known in the world today, but what if the appearance of a mezuzah, that what we call mezuzah, which just means doorpost, but the appearance of that thing that we call the mezuzah is something that people say, hey, the word of the Lord is taught here. They are teaching it to their children when they wake up and when they go to bed and everything they're doing, how they act and how they treat people. It's all about what the Lord is doing. So kind of a hallmark to that. The signs on your forehead and on your hands, yeah. There's been traditions that have come up through that. Good. Illustrations of that. Lots of prayers and blessings that go along with that. It's also a very good discipline to learn. Because, like we've talked about with the offerings, and like we talked about with the prophets, that these things that the Lord specifically says, and then things that have developed out of them that lift up the word and don't tear it down, all of these things should be about something that's already happening with inside of us and coming from the inside of us. The offerings, like we talk about the korbanot, as we were going through Vayikra or Leviticus. It's something that's coming out of us before we were to show up at the door of the tabernacle, later the temple. It was something that already happened with inside of us. So this thing about, you know, about depending on the provision, what does that sound like? Manna, remember the daily bread? Also, going into the land, you're going to occupy houses that you did not build. Those giant clusters of grapes that you did not plant. Trees that you did not plant, cultivate, such. The Lord providing that it was going to be a land, as the idiom goes, flowing with milk and honey. It would be provided for you as you go. Do you trust or do you not that the Lord is actually doing this? Am I just going because I admire this guy and he told me to go? Or is it that, wow, I trust that the power of God is at work and the power of God will actually go with me into the task that I'm going with at hand? About don't taking extra provisions kind of goes along with that. And don't fear persecution. That really goes along with that. Because don't fear what they're going to do to you. Don't fear those, and especially it says who can put yourself in prison and this and that. And take away your liberty or take away your livelihood. On and on it goes. Don't worry about that. Worry about rather the one, as it says, who can destroy your soul, throw it into the fire. Because why? It is the one who gives life that we are following. So thus, as our brothers and sisters in faith who have died because of their trust in the Lord, they put their life on the line. As it says, they considered their life to be not, you don't want to grab onto it. There's various ways you could translate it, but they didn't say it's something to be kind of clung onto like a death grip. To say, if this is my time to go, if this is the way that I am to go in, then so be it. And the interesting thing, I don't know if you noticed this as we were going through Luke chapter 10, it's like You know, don't worry. I'm trying to remember what the wording of it was, but I thought that was just so fantastic. Second verse. Ah, yes. Verses 26, 27. Therefore, do not fear them, for there is nothing concealed that will not be revealed or hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in darkness, speak in the light, and what you hear whispered in your ear, proclaim upon the rooftops. Don't worry that, hey, I'm dying for nothing, no one will ever know. Don't worry about that. Because as you see there in Revelation, where it's talking about the souls that were under the altar, crying out, how long will you let this go on? The Lord hears it, just like what you saw, you know, quoted back to the Lord there in our passage today, what he had said earlier to Moshe, revealing his character. The Lord heard the cries that were coming out of Mitzrayim. He heard those cries coming out for a long time. And he responded in a big way. Do we trust that the Lord is actually going to follow up on it? Or not? So, as we continue on there, this, you may say, wow, this is pretty intolerant about judging the unrepentant. Because if you go in there and they don't accept you, shake the dust off your feet. Even worse, it's going to be worse for Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for those who say, we don't want to hear what you're saying, and get lost. So thus, it's like, don't worry about it if the people are rejecting you. Because what did Yeshua say? They're not necessarily rejecting you. They're rejecting me. And they're rejecting the one who sent me. And a big message here that they were supposed to be saying, communicating Yeshua's teachings, but also specifically saying, as it's mentioned there, Matthew 10:7, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Or, say it another way, the kingdom of heaven is here. It's the here and now. It's coming. But you're like, well, but what about the sky splitting open and this and that? We'll get to that in just a little bit. We'll get to that because it also relates to what you see happening in our Torah passage today with Shalak. And kind of preview coming attractions. It's what's known in, I guess, military terms as a beachhead. So don't worry that it looks like it's starting small and not coming with power. It is a beachhead. And with a beachhead, that's, you say, a preview of coming attractions might be a way to put that. So, as we go through this, this is a dynamite thing that we had this memorial of D-Day, June 6, 1944. Because the parallels of what we just read here and talking about Yeshua sending out the 12 and the 70, and also the sending out the 12 spies and decision going to land, there's a lot of parallels in there. Now, don't worry. There's nothing gory you're going to see. These are pictures from D-Day, but nothing gory. So don't worry about it. But we talk about the maps and this and that and the other. We talked about all the cities they're going to go in, and we saw the places they're going to conquer. We're talking about a plan that the Lord had of how this was going to go in. And they were going to go into the land. And as you see, as it rolls out later on, that they go in, as it's recorded there in Judges, Joshua, where they actually do the beachhead. Now, beachheads here on D-Day, small little part of the coast. So when you talk about the spies going out and searching out the land, all these like red little things here are talking about where the various elements of the Wehrmacht, or the German army, where they were and what strengths they were, what units. These were not only the citizens of the occupied countries that spied this out, but also a spy network that spied this out of where all they were, all over the place. So decision was, hey, we're not going to go to the shortest point. We're going to go to this point here. And you probably have seen documentaries about the decisions they made and where they decided, why they decided to go to these particular beaches versus some other place. But as you saw, this was seeing this map here of the invasion, how they were planning to do it, and coming from all over parts of England with ships and planes, huge, several nations involved, all coming together to do this. A huge preparation, subterfuge, all kinds of things involved with this. And as you also kind of noting, this is a kind of a account of how it actually went. We saw the map of the plan of how it was supposed to go. But then we see kind of the map here of how it actually happened with, you see, General Eisenhower leaving in and General Montgomery from Britain, how they landed there in the beaches of Normandy and then pushed around to various places. Now you see, as you go through these arrows are talking about where the directions of the forces were going. And as we kind of go on through the Word of God and look at the conquering of the land, they kind of pushed here, pushed there, pushed up, pushed around. It's the old thing, it's as old as time, and you see it even in the animal world, divide and conquer. Divide. You split, you go and you slice up your enemy into small portions. Kind of interesting, because remember what the thing that the Lord said about entering the land? It's like, you know, be careful entering it all at once. Going to let it kind of get cleared out. That the Lord do some of the work in there. Yes, you're going to have invasion forces that are going to go into the land and clear it out. But some of it's going to be taken care of ahead of you. And we see a lot of miraculous parts of what the Lord did in there ahead. You know, Jericho, that's a big example there in Joshua. That's what the Lord did, taking down this massive fortified city with no actual military exertion from Israel whatsoever. Blowing trumpets? Okay, that's not necessarily a great military weapon. That's seen by human hands. If you were to see an army armed with trumpets, well, you might need earplugs, but what else might you be really worried about? Well, it turns out, as we see in Joshua, they had a lot to worry about. And as you see in Joshua chapter 2, which is kind of the Haftarah for this section today, with Rahab or Rahab, she feared the Lord. As we talked previously about the fear of the Lord, knowing that the Lord exists and that the Lord actually is present in what you're doing, she saw that the Lord was present and was a real force, not like the Baals. Yes?
It's kind of interesting. The only time a trumpet was really effective in war was when the Israelites used them.
Well, you can say trumpets are effective in a rallying point, and they're also a good signaling point because they carry over a long distance. But actually, as a weapon themselves, yeah, unless you call it a blunderbuss, but a blunderbuss is not really a horn. At least just don't point a blunderbuss at anyone. But this is kind of another little look on D-Day on one particular beach. We were saying earlier about, here's Omaha Beach, is one little section of the Normandy coast, part of the Normandy coast where the forces landed. Omaha Beach, kind of in particular, is Utah Beach, was another very difficult place that the forces landed. High losses, high casualties, just absolutely terrible. But Omaha Beach, you can see here the plan of all these different forces. These different forces plan was that they were going to all hit the beaches in different sections of it. Each was to go into their specified area. Now, of course, with the chaos of reality, it went awry pretty much at the beginning. But this was the plan. The plan is that each of you is assigned to do a specific task. And they had mapped out through the resistance and observations and such where you see these little red little bumps here along the Utah beach. These are bad. These are where the major emplacements were, the hardened bunkers with machine guns and big cannons and just nasty stuff. So they knew where they were. This is kind of like when you talk about big fortified cities. If you ever look up a documentary on what these bunkers here along the coastline were like, oh, wow. One of the reasons why you could say some complacency, but you can see a lot of providence was actually involved in the reason why this actually succeeded here on D-Day. But one of the things that you can see here is overconfidence. That was the one thing that happened with the Atlantic Wall, as it was called, is that the German army, the Wehrmacht, was very overconfident. These things were incredibly powerful. The guns, very fast. Didn't overheat. They would work and work and work and work and worked very, very badly. But one of the things to note is that, yeah, you could see where you were going to be facing. And each, see these little sections here, this is where the units were going to go ashore and they were going to go plowing right into these things. Plowing right up against the strongholds. So, that's what was being faced. So, here's a picture of General Eisenhower. He's talking to the 101st Airborne, the Screaming Eagles. These guys, you saw the beach. These guys jumped behind the beach. So you think, oh, it's always great to be going in with your friends and be have great lines of supply. These guys were dumped in with no line of supply. Totally cut off. Their job was to hold and to basically create chaos behind the lines to draw the coastal defenses back. So thus, we could say here with these guys, they knew from the very beginning that the airborne, it's always been a tough grind in the airborne because they're cut off a lot of times from their supply lines. And back here, we've kind of perfected it in modern times, you could say perfected, but at least it's not as bad as it used to be. I mean, when you hear the accounts of the airborne troops, a lot of them didn't even hit the ground. It was just bad. I mean, planes crashed. They were going in gliders. The gliders crashed. It was just a mess. But they went. And one of the things as you see in the record of what General Eisenhower was talking to them, he knew that a lot of them were not going to make it. And a lot of them also knew that they weren't going to make it. Yet, they went anyway. So, this one here is a picture of... this one's actually... they're headed up to Utah Beach. So, this is from one of the LSTs, the landing crafts that were coming up. It's just basically... we still have them today. They use them in Alaska a lot. Because they're great for landing on islands and such, because you can like put cars and the big ones, and you can put ATVs and such in them. They're great to like load cargo and such in them, because you can roll them off the front. So, problem though is that they're not great boats. They're great carrying cargo, but they're not great boats. And a lot of them get capsized, and just terrible things, and a lot of them got hit by all of those emplacements. So as you see here, they're coming up on the beach. You can see the beach off in the distance. But these folk in here, this is from the first waves on to Utah Beach in this particular. Most of these guys didn't make it. That was the sad thing. And a lot of them knew that going into it. But you'll note here, these guys with a little line on the back of their helmet. There's one here. These are lieutenants. They got the rank on the back. It's basically, you look, just a sea of helmets, except for there's a line here and a line there. Those are leaders. So when you're running up the beach, you have no idea where your leaders are and such like that, but you're like, hey, follow that guy. Follow this guy. And the problem also is that when they hit the beaches, a lot of these guys, the leaders, were gone pretty quickly. So if you're left without leadership and you have a task to go on, what do you do? So thus, when you see in our account here today in Shalak about these 12, when they were coming in, they were kind of like the leaders saying, hey, we scoped things out. This is what the deal is. So Who are you going to follow in? And we see at the end of our account that they would say, hey, we're going to go in anyway. We can do this. And there were people who followed them in. And those people who led them in, even when the Lord said no, they had to take responsibility for leading these folks into destruction. And we've seen in the Word through the rebellions of Korah how they led large people, large portions of people astray in this and that. So that's a great lesson for this is like, yeah, follow your leader. And one of the things that they had to learn very quickly when they started losing their leaders, when they hit the beaches, find a leader fast. Because for a lot of these guys were pretty quickly out of basic, had not really been in war before, didn't know much about where to go on this. So, didn't really know much about what was going on. Some of these guys had just been in officer school. Some of them had been in World War I. So they at least knew something, about what to do when everything is just going to pot around you. So thus, when you see in the Word, when Yeshua is picking the 12, Moshe picked those 12, these people are going to be responsible for those that follow after him. And then when you see the Apostle Paul talks about how you pick your, what are called deacons, basically the servants within the congregation, the elders, the overseers and such. And it's like you have to really be cognizant of how you pick them. And those who are picked have to be extremely cognizant of what, think very deeply about what their role is and their responsibility. Because just like these guys here at D-Day, leading them in, you know, think of your responsibility of getting what you hope to be everyone who's on this boat up the beach. So as we move on here, when the boat actually hits the beach, then it's like, do I stay or do I go? Do I stay in the boat or do I get out of the boat? These are, in particular, these are Canadians. So thank you, Canada, for showing up when they did. So these Canadians actually coming ashore, and they didn't have the fancy landing craft. They just had basically speedboats. So they were just jumping right over the front. So there was no protection for these guys whatsoever when they came ashore. But it's like, do you stay in the boat or do you get out? So thus, when Israel was faced with this decision, hey, we listen to these 10 spies that are telling us it's hopeless, or do we go anyway? Do we go anyway? And there's a picture of one of the LSTs. I think this was Omaha Beach. As they're going ashore, you know, the boats could not get all the way to the beach. It wasn't just a simple go up and the door drops down to right on the sand. A lot of times there was a shallow shelf, though, so they had to stop. They grounded and they were wading through the water to get up. Difficult. Not an easy, quote, getting out running for cover. Very difficult to get out. But good lesson for us is like, what do we do if we get to the place where we're supposed to go and it's difficult to get in, to get to our destination? Do we give up just because it's difficult at the outset? Or do we say, hey, we're going to push on to the objective where our task is that the Lord has given us? It may be slow going, we may fall in the process, but we're going to go forward. And, you know, here's a kind of a picture from one of the journalists who was going along of these folks who had gotten at least as far as the tank traps, still trapped in the water, all kinds of machine gun fire coming at them, and they were kind of like just trying to keep as low of a profile to go in, to escape it in. But they went forward because, as you probably heard some accounts of it, it's like better to go forward than to stay where you're at. Because you're at it, you're a sitting target. So better to go forward. As Messiah was saying, you know, don't worry about your life. Go for the objective. Go for what the Lord has sent you in. And there's this is Omaha Beach. There's a seawall that was there to keep the the ocean from eroding the whole coastline. So they put, kind of like what you see, you know, retaining walls, like a seawall to keep it from eroding. So when they made it up at least as far as the beach, over the top is those guns. So they made it up, here was cover. Well, great. You can stay there at the wall and you're out of the line of fire. Then what? This is where a lot of the, you could say, remnants of units that were in disarray, their leaders were gone, they didn't know what to do. They managed to find leaders at this particular point, some sort of safety. But then the decision is, do we sit there? Because if they just sat there, you know, their boats coming to pick them up would have to be under cannon fire because the cannons are still in business up above their head. If they wait longer, all of, when we looked at the map earlier, all those tank units and all those other things of the German army would relocate to the beaches and take them. So it's like your decision sitting here at this seawall is, do you go up and over? You may not make it, but do you sit where you're at and not make it? There's a picture of some of the defenders there at Normandy, the Wehrmacht officers, taken captive. So similar to what you see, you know, Caleb and Yehoshua saying, don't worry about those folk. Yeah, you got the Anakim, they're tall, they're powerful, and you can go on to that discussion. They look like they're pretty long-lived, so they've been around a long time, and their heritage looks to be extremely formidable. Big walls, big people, strong people, formidable people, but in the end, just like the German army, conquered. So, when the Lord sends us into where we're going, what do we do? Do we just say, hey, they're too formidable? And something also to always keep in mind is that, you know, the folk who are opposing us, they are people too. A lot of the soldiers in the Wehrmacht were called up, and that was a job. They did it. And there were certain units that were the diehards who were just, you know, crazy. But for most of the German army, no, they were not crazy. They were assigned to do a job. The Allied officers and soldiers, they're assigned to do a job. They went forward. So as we kind of go through this, and this is a couple days after the successful push out, as we saw those lines in the map earlier, pushing out of the beaches and taking over Normandy and other parts of that part of France. Then behind them came all the big troop ships. So when we look at this, yeah, we may be as a part of God's beachhead. God had the beachhead of Israel going into the land. Messiah had the beachhead of the 12 and the 70 who were going in throughout the land to spread the message of the word. But behind them came the reinforcements, those who would follow after. Those people who hit the beach, they may not have made it. But there were other people who were going to come to the same beach. And because that beachhead had been taken, the other soldiers could come up behind it. So thus, you see, like when the prophets talk about, you know, some are sowing the seed, and Messiah even talks about that with the sower. Hey, the seed is going to be spread about. We may be the seed sowers, and it may look like we're not accomplishing anything. But at the end of it, those who come up behind. And lastly, here's just an account after, I'm trying to remember what beach this was, but it's a mass service there of basically remembering what it is that you're actually doing. And in this case, remembering who is actually supposed to be in charge of your life. So that's one of the things, the lessons that we can get from modern history, because it should also be a good lesson that what we're reading in the Word, both in the Torah and in the writings, in the prophets, and in the apostolic writings, this is real life. This is not just some sort of fantasy story and such. Because we can see the same things happen in real life. And D-Day is a great example of it. lot of the stuff we read today, there's a lot of sort of same things that happened during D-Day. So, also a good lesson of D-Day is forward. Go forward. The Lord sends you forward. Go. So, with that, we'll just kind of conclude things today. Any last thoughts as we close out? Yes.
Some people say, give me the good news before you give me the bad news.
Good news before
and
the bad news.
Some people say, I want the bad news first and then I want the good news. And maybe if the guys had heard the bad news first and then the good news about the beauty of the land and the grapes and everything, maybe they would have been more positive. But then again, the thing that touches me most is this last scene with them all on their knees.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have anything to do about the national anthem.
Right. It's about what it is that truly grounds us. Because, you know, when you think about the nation of Israel is a people, the people of Israel. People of Israel can be in the land. They can be in Babylon. They can be in what we call Persia. They can move back to the land. And they could get moved out of the land again. But is Israel gone? Israel is the people. And more than just the people, it is the one who leads the people, who instructs the people, and who sends lots of messengers to the people. And as we saw and read as we went through Hebrews, the greatest of the examples and leaders is in Yeshua Mashiach, the great one, the sent one, the anointed one. So, as we close out today, let's close in prayer. And, you know, we can remember as a time of this, of those who fought for our freedom in various conflicts, not just the World War II, but all over time, but also our brothers and sisters that go through all kinds of struggles, persecution. They've gone through it over time and also to this very day, struggling in so many different countries. Father God, we thank you so much for giving us freedom. We thank you for giving us the testimony of what you've done throughout time, what your plan was in starting things out, and what your plan has been to bring things back around to where you will dwell with us, amongst us. There'll be no more death, suffering, pain. The former things will be passed away. And that you will forget all of the sins, transgressions, and iniquities. Father, we thank you for this great promise you've given us. And Father, we just pray that you strengthen the trust of our brothers and sisters around the world who are under pressure from friends, from enemies, armies. And we thank you for the strength that you've given us through their testimonies. Father, we thank you for the greatest testimony you've given us of who you are through your Son Yeshua. We thank you in his name. Amen.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hallel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. Hallel.info.